And I may be crazy, but welcome to The Morning Edge. I'm Floyd J. Winters, and to my right is Augie Schmidt.
This is Augie, and good morning, Tampa Bay. And on the left, we are today because we're going to have Mitch Perry on the line here pretty soon talking about what's going to really happen in Sarasota and Manatee and with marijuana and all the other little diseases we have as a society and solar, all those things, where are they going? And, of course, we always have the background sound of Trump, Trump, Trump. And is Mr. Trump really a Republican, according to George Will? He ain't. George Will writes about the counterfeit Republican. We'll talk about those other matters with respect to splitting up Manatee and Sarasota County and Galvano and the fight between Dietert out of Sarasota and what's going to happen in the rewrite of the districts, which is on the edge. In any case, Mr. Will says, when, however, Trump decided that his next acquisition would be not another casino, but the Republican presidential nomination, he tactically and quickly underwent many conversions of convenience concerning abortion, health care, funding Democrats, etc. Of course, he's funded Republicans all along as well. Will left that out. His makeover consists demonstrate he is a counterfeit Republican and no conservative. He's an affront to anyone devoted to the project William F. Buckley began 6 decades ago with the founding of the 1955 National Review, making conservatism intellectually respectable and politically palatable. 6 decades ago, let's see, that's 70 years ago. That would be about, let's see, going 15, about 1945 or 50 or so, somewhere in there. In any case, with the founding of the National Review in 55, making conservatives intellectually respectable, politically palatable. Buckley's legacy is being betrayed by an invertebrate conservative, now saying that although Trump goes too far, he has tapped into something. Therefore what? This stance, if a semi grovel can be dignified as a stance, is a recipe for deserved disaster. Remember, Henry Wallace and Strom Thurmond tapped into things also. So he's referring to things out of the past. Wallace being in the period of that particular Wallace was supposed to be the vice president. According to some, a communist, some a socialist, and so on. Instead, Truman was put in place, and Strom Thurmond was the indicator of what was happening when the Civil Rights Bill went into effect, and Strom Thurmond changed from a conservative of the social stripes in the Democratic Party, a Dixiecrat, to the Republican Party, along with a few others. So conservatives today should deal with Trump and with the firmness Buckley dealt with the John Birch Society in 1962. The society was an extension of a loony businessman who said Dwight Eisenhower was a dedicated, conscientious agent of the communist conspiracy. In a 5,000-word National Review excoriation, Buckley's words, he excommunicated that society from the conservative movement. Buckley received an approving letter from the a subscriber who said, "You have once again given a voice to the conscience of conservatism. The letter was signed Ronald Reagan, Pacific Palisades, California. So we do we have our guests on the line? No, not yet. Mm-hmm. Not yet. So do we have someone else? Do we have a caller?
Let's try this. Caller, I'm not sure if you can hear me. You're on the line, caller. I think, Mitch, is that you?
This is Mitch, yes.
Oh, this is Mitch.
Good.
That is our guest. Okay.
Okay,
good. That's about the time you said you'd call. Mitch, I was just discussing a little bit from the headline from the Herald Tribune, the new map that Nancy Dietert wants to have changed to keep the coziness of Manatee County and Sarasota in place. Your concerns and interests have you ascribed to me, or not to me, but to the situation of Florida, is the matter of the amendments for marijuana that are going to come on board and push that issue forward. So what would you like to discuss first, Mitch?
Well, sure. I mean, we can talk about the redistricting, which is going on in Tallahassee. Of course, like you say, Nancy Dieter wants to keep that congressional district wholly in Sarasota. I guess the way it's set up now, I know Vern Buchanan's very unhappy about the way that it's been redrawn. You know, it's really interesting, obviously, redistricting, right? I mean, it's an impractical science. There's no, you know, official best way to do this, especially not when you want to include what they call minority access districts, right? That's the big issue you've got in Corrine Brown's district up in North Florida. So it's not easy. And, you know, ideally, you know, you do have in, what, five or six states, and maybe more than that, you have these independent commissions that do this.
Iowa and a few others, yeah.
Yeah, California has mm-hmm. it. And, of course, you know, some critics say, well, that's still political because, you know, you've got politicians selecting the people who will be on there, and that's true. But I'll tell you this, the Supreme Court just ruled, you know, before they broke for summer last month, a couple months ago, that these are viable tools, and I think you're going to see more happening now of independent commissions because, you know, it's just so fraught with politics, obviously, and we've seen this week, you know, like you say, down in your area, Buchanan's unhappy with the new drawn district, you know, and Daniel Webster in the Orlando area, Republican, basically the way the district has been drawn in his area, he's sure to lose, basically, right?
Yeah,
it's not
right.
Very viable for him now.
Right.
Corrine Brown is same thing because they're changing her district, which is a bizarrely drawn district that was designed back in 1992 to allow for the first black member of Congress to be elected from Florida. We never had that before then.
That was called the PAC district. I mean,
you know, I mean, so you have to, it's complicated. It's really complicated mm-hmm. stuff. The Florida legislature, you know, was, so what they did, you know, I was never a huge fan, Augie, of the 2010 Fair District Amendments, which is what the legislature was found to be, you know, guilty of not following the lawsuit that the League of Women Voters, you know, pursued, which
right.
the Supreme Court came down here in Florida a couple months ago. But it was an attempt, and it's, you know, I think it's a good thing that we have that because it did force them, the lawmakers, to make them at least, you know, contiguous and not just ridiculously drawn like the, mm-hmm. you know, again, another situation we have up here in Tampa Bay, for example, is that Kathy Castor's seat, right? District
now she's
14.
In jeopardy now.
Well, it's not in jeopardy, but it's just not going to be so Democratic. And the reason,
right.
you know, basically it had been up until a few years ago, it actually, part of it had been in down your area in Manatee County, part of it, which is just mm-hmm. crazy, right? So
well, they had a District 55 that ran up I-75 over the Skyway up into St. Pete and up into
right.
all the way up into Tampa. So it was a strung out thing, and that is a form of packing. You know, they call it what do they call that? What's the word for the
gerrymandering?
Gerrymandering in the worst possible obvious way, but it's packing and or. Well, you can have a population that's greater than another in terms of registered voters, and that you think they would win. But in this situation, it's a way to maneuver around that, so all of your opponents get packed into one district or two, and
right.
all the other things are diluted down so that you can win these other districts.
The classic example of that, Augie, is, again, here in the Tampa Bay area, where across the bay, I was mentioning Kathy Castor's district, because there's officially eight districts, right, that...
Mm-hmm.
that the Supreme Court said you have to redraw. Now, obviously, that will affect all 27 districts that we have, congressional districts here in Florida, by just nature. But the two of the eight districts are here in Tampa Bay area are the one here where I'm at in Tampa, Kathy Castor, CD-14, and then across the bay. Yeah, Hillsborough, and mm-hmm. then across the bay in Pinellas, CD-13, which
right.
is held currently by David Jolly. Now, the situation is the CD-13 seat lately, the last 40 years was controlled by the late Bill Young, right? He was very, you know, relatively conservative. I mean, not a total right-winger, but I mean, he was more conservative than the district was, but because he had been around for so long, you know, he had always won re-election easily, even though his district would go for Barack Obama in recent elections, he continuously won, and Democrats never got within 15, 16 points of him,
mm-hmm.
right? And
is
so,
that,
and so then what happened though is when he passed away 2 years ago, that the Democrats in D.C. have been savoring, and you know, not to sound ghoulish, but basically have been saying whenever Bill Young goes away, whether that's death or when he stepped down, that we have a real chance of winning that seat, which is why last year was an amazing congressional special election in CD-13 because I think it was a total of over $10 million, maybe even more than that, spent $12
right.
million, I think, because both parties felt like this is a very...
Alex Sink, I think.
Right, with Alex Sink, and yeah, the Democrats... So, you know, Alex Sink lost by about 2 points, and it's interesting because basically the way that the district was and still is today before it's redrawn is roughly 2% Republican over Democrat, which is very close, right? Because most of these congressional districts are not within 2 points of one party or the other. So that's why CD 13, but now Bill Young won by like 15 points because he was Bill Young.
Mitch, why don't you describe that, that breakup 13 and 14 and so
right.
on?
Sure. Well, so what it has been until now, and this is what I mentioned about Kathy Castor, your district has been drawn up in a ridiculously bizarre way, crossing across the Howard Franklin Bridge, across Tampa Bay, into parts of Pinellas, the more liberal parts of St. Petersburg, the downtown and the South St. Pete area. It used to be even in Manatee County. Now, that was changed a few years ago. It's not in Manatee anymore, but still in Pinellas. And what the Supreme Court ruled was that this district is just drawn too far, you know, and it should not cross Tampa Bay. They
right.
explicitly said that in the court rulings.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the reason why the Republicans had drawn it like that is it made it better for, well, it was Bill Young and now David Jolly, because it concluded most of the kept it more Republican by focusing all on Pinellas County, but taking out the biggest city in Pinellas, St. Petersburg.
Right.
You know, most cities in America vote Democratic because there's just more liberal voters inside
urban,
the city.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they drew that out and they kept it most of Pinellas County. So then we have these base maps, which have been creating all this controversy this week, right? Because, you know, we don't know how any of these maps are ultimately going to be drawn. But the legislature had their staffers and their experts create what they call a base map of all the districts to start out with this week, as they're in the beginning of the special session, which they're off today, but they've been there all week and they'll be back on Monday.
Now, there's a hammer on this, as I recall from the district, the Supreme Court or the district judge, I forget which, that if in fact they were ordered back and to take out, they had to open it up. The League of Women Voters made a demand that they open it up because they were doing it in secret, so to speak.
Right.
What is the hammer on this thing? Do you recall?
Well, right. I mean, they are basically. I mean, I don't know if they're going. No. I don't know if they're actually going to. No, I think the actual drawing of the maps will still be done behind closed doors when they come up. I mean, they came up with that base map last week, right? And that wasn't done in public. That was just done, and it was mm-hmm. like, boom, here it is. The league has been saying. They're quoting the court as saying that this should be done totally out in the open.
Right.
But that's just the request, right? And the league, you know, should feel, you know, good about themselves because they were the victors in this court decision. But look, the legislature, if you've been reading the quotes this week from some of the legislators up there, they're not very happy about what the court is mandating them to do, and they're almost openly rebelling against it, saying, how dare they tell us to do this when it's against our own constitution, which is what we're here for. Although, again, the court said no, you went against the constitution.
That's
because
right.
the Fair District Amendments are part of the constitution now. So it's very intense, right?
I thought there was a demand that if they didn't do it in a certain time, that the court was going to intervene.
Well, right. No. Okay, no, that part of it, Augie, yes, is what they're doing. The court said they had to do it within 100 days, okay?
Right.
And so they're doing it right now. I mean, they took them today off. They're taking the weekend off.
Right.
But they're coming back on Monday, and it's supposed to be done by next Friday. So that's totally within the parameters of what the court ruled. Now, interestingly, they've already announced, the legislature, that they're going to come back in October, right, late October, for another special session to redraw Senate districts, state Senate districts, because there was going to go to court next month, right? There was two different court cases, actually,
right.
here.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one on the congressional
Congress
line,
and, Senate, yeah. mm-hmm.
and there was one on the state Senate lines.
Right.
And basically, the legislature, because, look, this is a mess, because the legislature is getting together for their regular session in January, not March of next year. They moved it up because of the presidential election, basically, and because our primary is going to be in March. So they voted over a year ago, or last session actually, to have it in January. So they didn't want to wait around because they knew that the court was probably going to find them in violation of the fair districts regarding the state senate districts. So they've already decided, you know, or announced, we're coming back in October and we're going to redraw again. So there's a lot of pressure on them because, you know, Corrine Brown, like I said, I mentioned her a moment ago. She's the black congresswoman who represents that really bizarrely drawn district that includes both Orlando and Jacksonville.
The upper northeast corner there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And now they changed it. Look, and everybody knew they were going to have to change that because it was just so, that district, see, this is where you have a conflict, though. This is where Corrine Brown is with the Republicans, right?
Yep.
Because the Republicans like the way that district was drawn because not only does it make it a Democratic district, which is what they were basically under court orders years ago to do, but also it packs all the Democrats in one area, makes it freer for more Republicans.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing going back to the Tampa Bay area with David
sure.
Jolly's seat, where they
went around the city.
You're right. They excluded St. Pete, and the court has said no, no. And that's why, going to the future, that's why, David Jolly announced he's running for Senate, because he realized, he looked at that new map and goes, you know what, as a Republican, I don't think I can win this district now. And B, while Charlie Crist is now soon going to be running for that seat, because now he sees it's all, you know, you can call him an opportunist. He's like, you know, wow, this is going to be great for a Democrat, and I'm the king of the hill. I'm sitting back here. And it's unfortunate because there's another candidate named Eric Lynn who was the only guy to have the temerity to challenge Jolly a couple months ago, even though he probably knew this was going to happen, right? Everybody knew this was going to be done up, drawn up. But nevertheless, Eric Lynn has raised $400,000. He's a first-time candidate. He was a guy who worked for the Defense Department under Barack Obama. And now, you know, he's going to get swamped when Chris gets in the race.
Oh.
Nobody knows who this Eric Lynn is, and everybody sure. knows who Charlie Crist
yeah,
is.
Name recognition is going to do it against him.
Speaking about name recognition, we're speaking with Mitch Perry from WMNF. And, Mitch, you also have a blog, and the blog is?
Yeah, FloridaPolitics.com and StPetersBlog.com.
Thank you for that.
And we have an issue right now where I cannot hear when a caller calls in until I put them on the air. So if you have a question for Mitch, I'm going to put you on the air, and once Mitch has paused or Augie has paused, I'll give you a chance to speak, and hopefully we'll have a good conversation today with Mitch Perry and Augie Schmidt.
The thing that's interesting about what's happening down here in Sarasota, it points up with Nancy Dieter trying to make some noise and curry favor with Buchanan so that when she runs for whatever seat she runs for next, because she's not going to stay in the Senate and in the legislature, is all about keeping the coziness of Sarasota Manatee. And Galvano, I think, is the fly in the ointment, and he has the power to prevent that, and I think he intends to do just that. He and Lee out of Hillsborough have the same...
That's right. Tom Lee in Hillsborough, he wants to have Hillsborough have... two congressional representatives. That's true. Now Tom Rooney. You know who Tom Rooney
yes.
is,
mm-hmm.
right? I guess he has the craziest district of all the districts currently that I've ever looked at on the map, because he includes parts of Hillsborough, and that's ridiculous. He should not be in Hillsborough. He never comes over to Hillsborough. It's not part of his, you know, really what he does. But what Tom Lee wants to do is have the Dennis Ross seat, which is in Lakeland, and it's partly in Polk County and partly in Hillsborough, make it much more in Hillsborough, and then I guess create that, it would also, again, allow Sarasota County into one congressional district, as Nancy Dieter has proposed earlier. And of course, now, I'm curious, by the way, Sarasota politics, if Nancy Dieter is going to quit the legislature,
she is.
to run for the county commission. Is that true?
That's exactly right. Yeah, there's a big move of there's more money there for her. I mean, she gets, what, 25
right.
grand? More than that, actually. And if she's two-term elected, and she's a former Democrat, she changes the nature if she goes to the Nora Patterson, who was a former Democrat who became a Republican, mold of a moderate Republican. She can affect a lot of things in Sarasota County and retire comfortably with a pension almost equal to full pay after two elections. So she can stick around long enough that will be to her benefit. And she
right.
knows that, I'm sure. So
sure.
They're,
and that's going to leave a musical chairs, right? Because Greg
exactly.
Stubbe is then going to leave the
well,
House
Bennett
to run for her
to,
Senate seat.
Yeah, Bennett, the supervisor of elections up in Manatee County, wants to go back to Sarasota and run for one of the county seats as well, because the pay is so great. I mean, $80,000
sure.
or more for one a week meeting. I mean, it's amazing. I was even asked at one time, was sorely tempted. But the, well, this is some years ago. They thought that, but I was too dangerous. I would say too many things they didn't want to hear. So, the thing that's interesting in all of this is you've got Galvano acting the way he's acting, and you've got Gardner the way he's acting, and then there seems to be a mix of problems that where Republicans are starting to rub up against each other
right.
in a serious way of conflict, and it and so if these amendments come, we got the solar amendment, which they've got a dual solar amendment designed to maintain the power FPL and confuse the public with that one. I think it's called Solar Smart Choice or something like that,
right?
And the other one's Solar Choice.
Well. Yeah, could we talk? Let's talk about that for a minute, if we could,
sure,
because
sure,
that's really
sure,
interesting.
Sure.
Because right, you have these two solar amendments. You've got the one that the grassroots that combines the Tea Party and liberals together. That's the Floridians for Solar Choice, and they are going to get reviewed by the Florida Supreme Court within, I think, September 1st. They've announced that, and they've been collecting signatures. They've been on their way, but you know, there's concerns that you know, Pam Bondi and others are arguing against it in the courts. And I actually read Mark Caputo, you know, Florida Day Book, Politico reporter, who's like the preeminent Florida reporter. He put a prediction today that he said that he thinks the Supreme Court's going to reject their language, ballot language, which would be just, you know, awful if you support that amendment. And I think if that were
are you talking about knocking out the one from the people or the one?
Yeah, the one from the people, right? Yeah, that goes before the court. And he's just predicting that. That may not be true, okay? I'm just saying that it's interesting that he'd go on the record like that, you know, because...
That's a bad indicator.
That's a bad indicator.
Are there three amendments or two? I know that one amendment allows you to sell excess solar from your house to a neighboring house. The other amendment allows you to choose providers, so if you want to buy solar from somebody besides just a power company, you can't. And
right.
then there's a third one that's designed to compete with those and confuse individuals. Can you explain what those amendments are, Mitch?
Well, I don't believe there's three. There's only two.
Yeah, one is called Floridians for Solar Choice.
Right.
And then the other one is called Consumers Smart for Smart Solar.
Right.
And the latter is the one where they're trying to confuse the people.
That's right.
And if you are not on the grid, then somebody's going to have to pay. The existing people remaining on the grid are going to pay a penalty for not maintaining the costs and the maintenance of the grid itself, and they're going to dump that back on the remaining people, which will be probably the dominant population.
Well, I would argue this. I'll say this. Obviously, I don't know what's going to happen with the courts. But right, the second one we're talking about, the Consumers for Solar Choice, which is backed by FPNL and all the big power companies, it really is, I don't think these guys even really want this to go through. What they're doing is right. They're trying to confuse everybody. But I'll tell you this, it's working for them, okay? Because there was a poll taken by Mason Dixon 2 weeks ago, and they read the ballot language for both these proposals. And the one that I think people think is the more grassroots one, the more authentic one, is losing, and this kind of fake one is winning, okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is amongst the public. So I think that my prediction is you may not have any solar amendments on the ballot next year.
It'll
because
get
of
wiped
the,
out, yeah.
Right, because, if the good one, the one that we're calling the good one, if the court rules that down, I can see where the other amendment, they don't even do it because they're really just there to confuse everybody, and there's not the other amendment up there.
It'll drop
off. To keep on spending all that money, although they have the money to spend, of course.
Well, they'll sit there waiting for something to come up. It's always in the title of things makes the difference, and when you want to confuse something, you make a similar sounding title
right.
for your effort, and of course, if you're going to get penalized for some guy next door to you, there's going to be real hatred among people if that thing goes through that way, and it's just a
right. So you really see, but I will say this about solar, because I've learned a little bit about this. You know, the bottom line is solar price is really going down, right, in
yep.
price. And so FPNL, more than FPNL, which is not really based around here at South Florida, but they are doing more than Progress is or TECO up here in Tampa is. But I think that the other companies will start doing more because there's just business sense for them to do it. You know what I mean?
Well, they moved to solar, absolutely.
The power companies are like any corporation. They do what's in their best interest. Mm-hmm. And in their best interest, it's not been using that now, but because the price is coming down so dramatically, they're going to start using it more. I think we're going to get some more of that
it's
naturally.
And the price is going to go further down because the Chinese are desperate for sales right now. They're revaluing their currency. They're trying to get more and more market out there. They're trying to prop up a growth level in the vicinity. They're trying to get it to 9%. It's amazingly still at 5%, which is a large number. But if it doesn't go something above 5%, they're politically in trouble within China. It's a serious matter. And solar is one of the things that will benefit. The dumping will increase, and the price will go further down.
Yeah, that's a great point. And by the way, they've had tremendous growth, right? You're at 5%, and they want to go to 9%. Isn't it interesting, by the way, that Mike Huckabee, by the way, on the campaign trail in Iowa said yesterday he thinks with a flat tax we can get 6% growth, right? Which nobody's ever taught. Jeb Bush is talking about 4% growth, but people say that he's kind of like out of line. Like, where's he coming with that? And Mike Huckabee said 6% yesterday, which is pretty funny.
They throw numbers around, go toward infrastructure rebuilding in a massive way and give up military spending, which is what we did at the end of World War II, and we're able to build our infrastructure wholesale in the interstate highway, and it was supposed to be a rail system. If they were to finish up the interstate rail system as part of the highway system, then the growth rates would explode, but it would wipe out 90% of our inflated, self-owned $18 trillion debt. But the Chinese are aware of this. So there's a political shakeup going to go on over there, and it's what Ron Paul is advertising is going to happen to the world. Is what's going to happen to China, as if we are in that ball game, and China owns $1 trillion of our $18 trillion debt. Not the whole thing. You were going to talk about the marijuana thing too, Mitch.
Right.
What's the story on that?
Yeah, that's interesting. So it may happen today, but probably not till Monday. But there is a group, and they're calling themselves Regulate Florida, and they are going to announce that they are putting together a petition drive for a constitutional amendment that would be to legalize marijuana. And this is not medical marijuana, of course, mm-hmm. which is already ongoing, which, we know that came close last year, lost by 2 points, 2.5 points, and they're doing that again this year to get on for ballot for 2016, and they're probably going to make that. We'll see what happens with that. But this is a completely different effort, and it's being, and it's going to be announced, like I said, in the next couple of days, and I have no idea, it could, whether it's going to make it on the ballot or not, because again, you need 688,000 signatures to get on the ballot, which is why any type of attempt like this on a citizens driven thing needs a lot of money, right? Because you just need to get the volunteers out there, pay the volunteers, get the petition signed. But what this is interesting, Florida, which is, so currently right now there is 19 states in the United States that have medical marijuana laws, and there are 4 states that have legalization outright of marijuana: Colorado, Washington, Alaska, and Oregon. And Ohio next year has got a legalization. I just read that this morning. They got an amendment for next year that would be to flat out legalize pot, not go to medical marijuana, bypass medical marijuana. Here we don't have medical marijuana yet, and yet there's going to be, not really competing measures because they're both pro-pot, if you will. The criticism for the folks who were supporting the medical marijuana thing from the sheriffs and other folks was like, oh, this is just a backdoor way of, you want to legalize it. And the medical marijuana people said, no, we just want it for people who have, for medicinal purposes. Now, I've read that the medical marijuana people are okay with this. They think the more the merrier. They're not unhappy about this if this is going to go through and there's going to be a competing amendment, which, again, we don't know if that's going to actually happen in 2016. There's a lot of work to go in advance. But we'll know by next February if this is going to happen or not, because that's a deadline when, measures on the ballot have to be, you know, vetted through the Supreme Court, and they have to have all the signatures there. But this is kind of exciting, though, right? I mean, you know,
if you move people out of the prison system for these minor offenses of possession, and only put people in for selling. But the other thing that tails along with this, and the artificial cannabis and so forth, and medical marijuana is in that category, is the issue that's being drug up as a very serious matter, and it's more dangerous and more addictive and serious, along with heroin and everything else. These various forms of cannabis that are being sold and bypass the problem with drug abuse and incarceration and people getting around it. And the police are after that hot and tong, and the willingness to fill the jails is in their, it seems like it's in their bailiwick all the time. That's what they want to do.
Well, I don't know, though, Boggy, because you're seeing a lot of at least rhetoric that's what people don't want, the jails filled. And when I say people, I mean Republicans, right?
Yep.
I mean, the Koch brothers, right? They're actually leading this effort to on criminal justice reform. And there's a lot of Republicans.
Now, yeah, that is interesting, yeah.
Yeah, no, it is. And we haven't seen it in Washington yet in terms of actual legislation, although I read something recently where that's really going to be close to coming up. I mean, Rand Paul has been working with Cory Booker on one particular law, mm-hmm. and you've got Republicans in Capitol Hill, but you've got a lot of Republicans. I did a thing on the radio years ago with Newt Gingrich and Ed Meese. I actually interviewed Ed Meese, the former Reagan Attorney General. There's this whole thing with all these Republicans, these conservatives. I think they look at it as a cost-effective way. They realize that the war on drugs is not working, and it's been way too expensive. And so there's this effort to really start reducing the number of people we have in jails because of drugs. And it's a bipartisan effort, and there haven't been too many concrete efforts yet. But there's a lot of money behind it, and there's a lot of conservatives who are fighting for this as well. I don't know if they necessarily support marijuana legalization, but they do support decriminalizing drug crimes specifically, and I think that it's a very smart thing to look at, because we all know, I mean, that's part of our problems we have in our society is, busting so many people for what some would call minor drugs. I mean, certainly I think pot would qualify for that. You know, I think you get into different worlds with cocaine and heroin and other drugs, but pot itself, is never been more popular. Now, interesting on the campaign trail, because Marco Rubio and Chris Christie have been really prominent in saying they would fight to the dickens against legalization of pot, period. Now, Chris Christie's going nowhere, by the way, but Marco Rubio is kind of interesting because he's really kind of put himself out there as like,
When he did the thing, abortion, never, never, incest and a rape, forget it, it's still abortion, therefore. I think he put himself on a side that's going to be hard to reach back with his other foot. The thing that is interesting to me, too, is this business of here's Hillary up in New Hampshire finding out that a heroin addiction in New Hampshire is huge, of all places. You would not think that.
And Vermont, too. And I mean, all the Northeast, apparently, there's a lot of states that heroin has become this big issue. Right. And so Hillary's talking about it, and John Kasich is. They're all talking about it up there because it's such – because, as you know, these guys, these candidates are all living in New Hampshire, right? I mean, right, and they will be for the next 4 months. So when they talk to people on their little listening tours, they go to these town halls, they go, what's concerned you? And people are saying, this is heroin addiction, So they're having to incorporate it into their platforms or discuss it at least. They were never intending to do that, but because it's such a big issue in New Hampshire, they have to talk about it.
The Afghan war really spurred that, didn't it? I mean, Lord. And it's made it worse than ever. I mean, the production's gone way up in Afghanistan, and the Taliban are nurturing it along and shipping it out everywhere to Europe and here and so forth, the opium and the heroin and all of that stuff. The thing that they've got to come to, this incarcerating people for personal choice, which the libertarians, Rand Paul and so forth, have always railed against, has got to come to another conclusion. So I think where they're going to head is into mental. They're going to have to keep an institution in place, because to give up $80 billion of monies being currently spent in this situation will be more than they can tolerate. And they got to find a way to spend that money. So I think they'll find mental institutions is the new pathway, and it'll be more humane and compassionate and so forth. Baloney, but I think that's what they're headed.
We're speaking to Mitch Perry from WMNF and Florida Politics, and we will be back in about 2 minutes.
a man who walks with the animals, talks with the animals.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
With the animals.
This part of the Morning Edge is brought to you by Callens, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446. 941-749-1446.
I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. Turn out the light.
And we are back in the Morning Edge, and we're speaking with Mitch Perry. Mitch, welcome back.
Hey, great to be with you guys.
You only had a limited amount of time, you indicated before, so I don't want to intrude too much on your time. So how much longer do you have?
I've got about five more minutes.
Five more minutes. Okay, Mitch. I was projecting that perhaps the way to keep the money in the pipeline and keep spending it will be towards a mental health and things like that.
I think August referred to the fact that we have politicians making money and politicians' friends making money through our prison systems in Florida.
Yeah, that's
the more people you put in prison
more
for marijuana
they feel.
And small laws like that, the more the people who contribute to our current parties make.
Yeah, you can hear the sheriffs grumbling every time you talk about shutting down their system. So Mitch, what are your concern? You indicated where the pot issue was going.
Well, another issue I'm going to talk about, if I could, right now as we speak live, John Kerry is in Havana, Cuba, right? He's the first American Secretary of State since the 40s to be there for this flag raising of the American Embassy in Cuba. And whatever your thoughts are about this whole issue, this is a historic day, actually.
Oh, it really is,
U.S.-Cuban relations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be following that today a lot. And I'm getting, it's interesting, of course, we're here in Florida, and it's a president, I just got a release statement from Jeb Bush in my email, and all these other Republicans are condemning this. I will say this, Augie, I think that, we're 8 months into this reapproachment, basically, and I think it's a little frustrating that the Cuban government has done zero in terms of changing their course when it comes to human rights. I do think it's unfortunate. I think it's unfortunate because the sanctions are what needs to end, right? If you really believe in, us having better relations with Cuba and all that, it's about the sanctions ending. And the Congress will never do that until they see some type of bending by the Cuban government. And I know it's early so far, but still, they keep on rounding a lot of, activists up all the time. And that's not, that's not great for the Cuban people, which I think this is, to me, it's all about making it better for the Cuban people down there.
Well, we have a fellow by the name of Johannes Werner that comes on.
Yeah, sure.
And he speaks on the Caribbean, and he's talking about this sort of thing. Once we start shipping our people in and out of there for tourism, once that change takes place, and it's not just for business or education, the excuse to go, once that opens up and the Cubans start arresting Americans and start throwing them in jail, oops, sorry, we didn't mean to do that, now we have a whole other set of bargaining points and people wanting to make things continue, business wanting to make business grow. What do you see in that situation, Mitch?
Well, I hope he's right. I think that we just, I think Raul Castro is still officially going to be president for a couple more years.
I
figure the next regime will probably still be similar to him in terms of their policies, but they have to bend at some point. And I think it's been frustrating because it's lent credence to Marco Rubio and these other critics. They can say, this negative stuff about how the Americans have done giving up all these different things for Cuba and not getting anything in return. And we really kind of haven't. I mean, again, I understand it's the first year, things don't turn around overnight, but it would be nice for them. You know, I guess they're so locked in their old ways, that Cuban government, you know, the way they just do things there. And I think that it's right. We're already seeing more travel, obviously, because of the relaxation of the travel rules this year. And that's going to continue to happen. And we know that businesses want to get involved, you know, down there. American businesses do. And I think there's a portent for a lot of great things to happen. I'm frustrated, though, you know, because I think that
knowledge is frustrating,
yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, because to me, the bottom line is, look, I live in here in Tampa where they've been on the cutting edge of trying to do things with Cuba, you know, for years now here. And they're very excited that President Obama saw the light and did what he did back in December. But I think that, to me, as a guy, as an observer, and simply as an observer of this, I want people all over the world to be able to be freer, if you will.
Oh,
and
sure.
That means that the Cuban people, you know, they live in a repressed society. There's no doubt about that now. And I'm hoping that this will, of course, because I agree with ending the whole thing. I think it's been a terrible, it has not worked that we've been trying to do for 54 years. But having said that, it's a two-way street. You know, I was thinking about China this morning. You know, you mentioned China earlier.
Right.
And, you know, 20 years ago, I felt like we had more leverage with them about their human rights. Now we don't even really talk about it at all, right? They're just too big a player. We have to be involved with them. Their prime minister is going to be in Washington next month. That's going to be a very huge meeting. There's an article today about the New York Times saying that we're going to discuss human rights with them. But I'm pessimistic about that, because I think that we talk a good game about human rights overseas, but we really, it's hard for us to put the leverage in, or we don't really want to do that, you know. And I think that's you know, Jimmy Carter. I was thinking about this, right? Because Jimmy Carter, when he came into office, was his whole thing. He tried to really with the Soviets at the time was to really improve human rights and make that a mission that we would try to do that. And I know we all countries are sovereign; they do what they're going to do. But I'm just hoping, again, in the case of Cuba, that the regime lightens up a bit here and stops.
Well, we have a very
we
have a set of bad habits in this country. We confuse what friends are and what business is too often. The Saudis being the best example of that, and their preachment of Sharia law and spreading of it through ISIS right now, and the wholesale huge article in the New York Times about the gathering of the Yazidi people
into that, yes, I read that.
I read through the whole thing this morning, and that's, I'm going to talk about that with maybe Johannes a little bit. But there is sexual trafficking coming out of Cuba, actually. So you have these governments that we do, in order to do business, we do a wink and a nod, which is what you're suggesting. And the disappointment is, why don't they change? Because we do a wink and a nod. You know?
Right. Exactly. I mean, I remember China in 92 when Bill Clinton was running against George H.W. Bush, and Clinton made that a big issue, right? Because they called it constructive engagement. I guess they even go back to the South Africa, constructive engagement. You know, should we engage with these countries who do terrible things to their people? I think we should do that, and we can try to push, but, you know, it's like we talk about in China, we talked 25 years ago about really pushing them, and now we just don't even, you know, we don't really try at all. And China continues to do some horrible things to their people over there.
No, it's repression. Capitalism in communist form is neo-fascism, is really what it is. It's you know, oligarchies being created by the moment, and when they see the opening, they do what happened to Russia. They turn everything around, and the thugs run everything all over again in a new way. Mussolini figured it out. He knew how to run the trains on time, and beyond that, he knew how to turn everything over to business, and the mess that happened thereafter is what Italy is like today. And Germany found a way to make it efficient, and 500 concentration camps later, the whirlwind came around, and they lost the war, and the embarrassment of the German people still exists today. So the consequences are curious how what goes around comes around. But the same thing with the Saudi Arabians and ISIS now. This is a new one, and it's not so new. It's been going on for a while, but now it's becoming rawly apparent that this thing is much more serious than people have any idea about. But what it goes at, Mitch, is the whole idea of Islam and Muhammad, because these people are pulling up legitimate Sharia law as the argument for everything they do. This is the way Muhammad was. This is what we want to be.
Yeah, it's really bad. Hey, so, guys, I got to run.
Hey, thank you so much, Mitch. I appreciate this. Let's do it again. And
absolutely.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, there you have it. Mitch Perry, it was very enlightening, and it was a good conversation. I think we can talk about a few more things here. We can continue to talk about Mr. Trump, like a lot of people.
Well, you were talking
doing.
About capitalism. I have a quote about capitalism that's interesting. It comes from a guy named Bernie Sanders. At least it's attributed to him.
Hey, Bernie did make a nice speech about that, didn't
he? Not sure if it's exactly his, but this is it's been attributed to him. He says, everything we feared about communism, that we would lose our houses and savings and be forced to labor eternally for meager wages with no voice in the system, everything has come true under capitalism. And it was an interesting quote. Yes, it's true that people are saying, oh, communism is so bad. But as far as people losing their houses, which happened during the Great Recession, as far as people losing their wages, all that happened because capitalism just went awry.
Yeah, and when you really talk democracy, whose freedom are you creating? Are you creating the freedom of the individual, or are you creating the freedom of the corporation to roll around the countryside, gobbling things up in times of despair, such as depression, recession, and so forth, foreclosures and things like that, which we discovered were happening left and right?
When the Supreme Court said that democracy belongs to corporations, when they had the ruling of Citizens United that said corporations are people and they have the right to vote and their money matters in elections, they said basically democracy
and
belongs
was a 9-0
to
decision.
Who has the most money.
It was a 9-0 decision when they did
Supreme,
that.
Was it 9-0?
Yes, it was.
The Supreme Court says
I was amazed.
That, money matters, money buys our elections. It absolutely is true. Elections now, presidential elections, are billion-dollar affairs.
Well, that is why Mr. Trump is doing so well. People say, well, he's got the billion. He didn't have to, he's not beholden to anybody but himself. He's got a whole, it turns out his whole family are multi-billionaires as well, and he's got two sons that are operating his enterprise. I didn't realize he had so many family members who actually work in his system and are very effective and good.
Well, Hillary on the other side.
And it's the same thing on the other
she's
side.
She's claiming that she needs about $2 billion in order to manage this presidential election.
Well, the thing that the Supreme Court also said at the time they made that decision, 9-0, was they said, well, it's the Congress that needs to, this needs to be changed, but the Congress will have to do it. And why would they do it? They're beholden to that money, so why are they going to turn it down when that's what's been benefiting, and the ones in power have been benefited most. But as Mitch mentioned, the Koch brothers are against some of the things the public are against, such as incarcerating people for pot possession and things like that. It wrecks a society. If you care about the society, if you care about individual rights, you know, this thing, this whole business is such that we really don't have a good grip on what we're doing, and people have given up hoping for that. And in the case of Trump, the Republicans especially have given up, and they said 46% of the people really believe that he is on the right track. The other guy that's gaining from that they're willing to speak out and not go along to get along, is Ben Carson. And his numbers have jumped lately, too. The guy that's on the cusp of whether to go one way or the other is Rubio. And the fourth guy is Kasich, who's coming up and who could surprise people out of New Hampshire.
A moderate Republican, a person who would draw from both ends, both parties.
Yeah. Kasich would be a problem if he becomes a presidential nominee. If he becomes a vice presidential nominee as a cover for the guy that's in charge, then that's a whole other argument. But, if he were the presidential nominee in the end, the Republicans are going to have a real, real big problem. But with Hillary's server and all of the problems with the classified stuff, I think she has the Democrats have a problem now, too. They're not really unsure. They're even hinting that Al Gore will run, or Kerry will run, or Biden will run, if things look bad for Hillary. And so where is this thing going? It's a good question. And they're all in their 70s and not getting any younger. So,
that's true. Caller, we're going to put you on the air. I'm having a hard time screening calls right now. You're live on 1490.
Good morning.
Good morning. Who is this, please?
This is Augie. Who's calling in?
My name is Joe Shea from Bradenton.
Bill, we have a very bad connection. Could you try again? Because our connection is pretty bad right now.
Call right back, Bill.
Okay, please, Bill.
All right. Yeah, your voice is breaking up, Bill, and so please call back. Sound like you had something of real concern, or we're always interested in the audience that comes from the outside, not just from the inside. And we don't like to talk to ourselves, so Bill, if you please call back, we'll be more than willing to have the conversation. So I think maybe Bill may be
on. Okay, we're trying again, Bill. How's our connection now?
Hello, Bill. Let's just stay with this.
Bill.
No, you're not Bill. This
okay,
is
welcome to the Morning Edge.
Welcome. Who is this?
Hi. My name is Joe Shea.
Joe Shea. How are you, Joe? This is Augie. I know you. We know each other.
Hi, Augie.
How are you? What's up?
Well, who's on the air right now?
Augie in the Morning Edge and Floyd Winters, who's my co-host.
Oh, I know Floyd, but I didn't recognize your voice.
Well, Joe, welcome. Do you have a question for us?
What's on your mind?
Well, what are you guys talking about this morning?
Well, we were talking about a number of things. I talked about the George Will article that referred to Trump as a counterfeit Republican, which I say probably is correct. And then the matter of pot and on the ballot and solar on the ballot. And then the matter of the redistricting thing that's being forced upon the Republican legislature. So those are basically the four things.
You sound like you're empathetic toward the redistricting.
Yeah.
You want to talk about redistricting? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we were talking about that,
yeah,
Joe. Do you have a comment?
It sounds pretty fair to me.
Are you,
there's a lady from Jacksonville, the congresswoman there. This is district stretches from Jacksonville to Orlando, maybe to Tallahassee.
Mm-hmm.
And she says the redistricting will put so many black voters out of her district that she won't be able to represent them anymore.
Well, that's not true. Yeah, she said that, but she is what is notoriously in a PAC district, so that the only outcome will be that a black representative would come out of it currently. Under the change, she'll still have a dominance. She just won't have the kind of dominance she had before. She's very comfortable, and she doesn't like to be made uncomfortable. She's happy with the Republicans because they made it that way for her.
Joe, we got to let you go because the connection is not very
good.
Well,
let him see if he can make one more comment. Go ahead, Joe. Try one more comment. We were having a little trouble hearing you.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm a Democrat, and I've been a member of the Democratic Executive Committee for a long time. I am so very drawn to Donald Trump and his directness and his capacity to make deals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we have been robbed by China and Mexico and the rest of them. They seem to get all our manufacturing and so many millions of jobs that, we really do need a restoration of the American economy.
Mm-hmm. You're a Democrat, and you're saying you'd vote for Trump, right?
Yes, at this point.
Uh-huh. Now, that's interesting. He is feeding into the issue of, do you really have any say, and is Washington listening to what your concerns are? So what about your local Democratic Party? What do you feel about them?
Well, we're out of power. I don't think we even have a single Democrat on the county commission.
Are you talking about Sarasota or Manatee?
Manatee.
Oh, Manatee. I think you have somebody on the county commission, Smith. He's one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I beg your pardon.
Joe Smith.
You're correct.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one out of seven.
Okay.
And
he's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that.
But it's just one out of seven.
And, yeah, but in Sarasota, it's 9 out of 5.
Really?
So it's even worse, yeah. You've got...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so, and the developers in Manatee County, it's Baruff and Neal that run things, and in Sarasota,
yes.
It's
Carlos Baruff and Pat Neal, that's correct.
Right, and Benderson runs it in Sarasota County, along with a few others. And,
yeah.
And they're much more cowed over there. In Manatee County, you do get some change. Galvano, if he splits the districts, which is what I think he's going to do, he gets more power it's going to minimize the power of Sarasota County, and it'll maybe shake them up down there enough that it'll actually cause some changes that they will be fights from within the Republican Party, which have been going on, but are not very apparent to the general public. So, yeah, I think
I find myself liking Bill Galvano.
Yeah, well, it's because he's a moderate Republican. There aren't many of those around.
And you've not.
You might want to pay attention to Gardner in the Senate as well, because there's going to be a fight developed that you Republicans will cringe over, and it will. I think it will cause a real shakeup down the road. And as the I-4 corridor develops with respect to the Puerto Ricans coming in, because there are 40,000 Puerto Ricans are coming every year to that I-4 corridor. That
no kidding.
No kidding. That if you want to know a fact, in the 08 election, Obama got 80,000 votes from that. This swung the election for him from the I-4 corridor. And in 12, he got 100,000 votes, all from the change in the numbers from the Puerto Ricans, who are already voters, already citizens. They don't have to seek citizenship because they're a possession of the United States. They already vote, and they come in and vote. And it's changing the game. And as they move to the west and away from Orlando, they'll start moving into the Bradenton area. And if this splitting of districts happens, it's going to make even a bigger, quicker change.
I've noticed that there are more Puerto Ricans now than there were recently.
Yeah, well, that's why. They're bankrupt. The country's bankrupt. There are no jobs.
Yeah.
The unemployment rate's like 25%.
You're listening to 1490 AM.
Hold on.
WWPR.
Okay.
Hold on.
Bradenton,
Sarasota,
Tampa Bay.
They are just like our own Greece. So, Joe, we're going to let you off the air here. But thank you. Call back. And
would you please give my regards to Floyd?
Well, Floyd's right here. He can say goodbye himself.
Joe, thank you very much for the call. We got one more caller to have one more quick comment. Joe, goodbye.
Okay.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Floyd. Bye.
Caller, you're on the air. Get a chance for a comment real quick.
Yes, I'm calling. I'm just catching the tail end of this discussion. But what I'm trying to understand right now, I wonder why we in the United States are feeling like that the Republican Party is going to make such a difference with the way things are going, and why they're looking down on the Democratic Party, who has been working, and I think they've been doing very good. Nobody says anything about the positive, but all about the negative. And every time we get people running for election, the only thing we hear is a bunch of negative talk. I'm going to hang up and listen to that.
I think
that was
Neil, and I recognize his voice. Neil, just to answer your point, the local Democrats are ineffective. They don't get anybody elected. The national Democrats do something of a better job in general elections, the presidential elections. And until we get serious at the local level, we're going to keep electing governors who are of Republican nature, and such as the one we have here in Florida currently, and that is Governor Scott. And we've seen what kind of governor he has become, and or maybe he always was. But, Floyd, we're going to see everybody on Monday. And if you want to call back again, Neil, and talk about this some more, I'll be glad to do that with you. I'm sure Floyd will as well. So we will see you on Monday.